Oh, hello, Internet, and welcome to episode 40 of Verbal Graffiti with your host, Brian Glass, a.k.a. The B-Man, the People's Degenerate. You might have noticed I cringed just a teeny bit when I said 40. Did so because that is also my age. And we know if you're an American and you haven't had success yet by age 30, that your life is officially over. You have to accept your fate, that you'll never get past middle management in the career you despise. If you're not married, the only people available left are morbidly obese, probably addicted to drugs, alcohol, gambling, or some other vice that will torpedo your life once you get with her. You two will get married and buy a starter home, but since you work middle management, you'll never have enough money to buy another home, so you'll be stuck in that starter home, never having enough money to refurbish it, which will cause a lot of strife and fighting with your partner. You'll have children, and once they get married, again, you won't have the money to buy a large, extravagant wedding, and your kids will resent you till your dying days because of that. And this cycle will just go over and over and over again in your family. Whoa, B-Man, was that a dark opening? Are you talking to yourself there? Maybe a little bit. I would apologize, but I am very, very perturbed at myself and at life right now. I'm not going to lie. I filmed an entire episode 40, and I found out afterwards that there was a bit of a buzzing with the audio. I guess my recorder and my mic, like, wires were touching each other. I think that's what was causing it. And I'm not a perfectionist, but I'm like, I care too much about my product. You know, if this looks so cocaine and it was mixed with fentanyl, like, I wouldn't give it out to the people. I'd make sure it was pure cocaine. Same thing with Verbal Graffiti. This is pure drug. It's not going to kill you. It's for enjoyment only. And that little buzz, it bothers me, and I know it would bother you. So I'm refilming the entire episode. Frustrating. Also perturbed at the world, because episode 39, I proclaimed that what's her name? Kate Middleton was dead. I literally spelt it out in the episode. DEA dead, Kate Middleton dead. What happened the day after I filmed that episode? Kate Middleton walked out into the balcony of Buckingham Palace, I think, and waved to all the fans. She looked beautiful, especially for someone who has cancer. Just letting you in a little bit inside baseball here. I filmed the episodes a few days in advance. That way it gives me time to edit the video, link up the audio that's not buzzing, and create reels. So I had filmed that, and then literally the day after Kate came out, should I have put the episode out? If I was a professional, no, I wouldn't have, but I'm a comedian, and I think doing that whole segment, and then it turns out she's actually alive and came out like within 24 hours, that makes the segment even funnier that my conspiracy theory is wrong. I guess tough day to be a conspiracy theorist. I have to admit, maybe someone did land on a moon. Maybe it was a lone gunman that killed JFK. Maybe the world is not flat. I really never believed it was flat, but someone definitely killed JFK other than whoever that was, maybe the CIA. Tough times to be a conspiracy theorist. Tough time to be an audio engineer here at Verbal Graffiti. I got Carrie to yell. I was wrong with that conspiracy theory. Good for you, Kate Middleton. You're alive and well, and whoop-de-fucking-do for the British. I will say, though, something that makes me chuckle a little bit. If you go today to the what I mentioned in episode 39, the Kate Middleton missing subreddit, everyone there is furious with the royals for not being truthful about Kate's whereabouts and her health. And someone like myself who enjoys history, that kind of makes me giggle, knowing of all the things the royals have done, that's what upsets you, not tracking Kate's whereabouts at all times. You might want to worry more about, I don't know, the colonization of half the world for nearly 1,000 years. You might want to be a little bit more upset about that. But yeah, I carry that out. It's on my shoulders heavily. Like always, my entire life, I have terrible timing. Pushing that aside, trying to get into a better mood now. On a brighter note, Verbal Graffiti is now officially a podcast. I got a RSS feed, I believe it's called. So now you can listen to just the audio in podcast form on Apple and Spotify. And I'm trying to get on a couple other forms or, you know, platforms as well. But I think those are the main two that most people use. I will release it at the same time I do as the video podcast. So it will be released Monday, Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern time, New York time zone. I didn't put it as a podcast, A, because I didn't know how to do so up till now. And B, I just assumed most of you watching this are deadbeats who are unemployed and are avoiding paying child support. So I didn't think any of you drive to work, but maybe some of you do. So if you do have to drive to work or get around, maybe it'll be easier for you to listen to Verbal Graffiti in podcast form. So yeah, go to Apple, Spotify, YouTube, all the social medias. We're everywhere. Tell people, link, subscribe, like, tell your friends, especially if they're busty and, you know, like skinny, bald, white guys. I'd appreciate that. I think that's all, everything we get into before we can start the episode with the Reddit forums. Let's see if I have it open. All right, let's get into this next Reddit. I found this in the subreddit, Dating Advice. Oh, the B-Man will give you some advice. Sorry for that. Fiancé refuses to kiss me. My fiancé, male, 32, refused to give me, female, 25. Okay, so that's a 7-year age difference, a kiss. While cooking dinner, I started to get stressed out and overwhelmed and needed something to ground me. I looked at him and asked for a kiss. This is normal, and he would typically give me a peck, just a kiss. But yesterday, he kept refusing, and I was confused. I asked him why, and he said he didn't want to because our stepdaughter, age 8, was there. She was on her iPad in the other room. But besides that, he gives me kisses in front of her all the time. She kisses me and I her, lots of kisses. We have been engaged for almost a year. We also have a daughter together. This made me very upset and I told him, I don't know how to address this. We are engaged. Why didn't he kiss me? The B-Man, I'm going to be very direct. I'm going to keep it 100, keep it on the level with you, if that's still in vogue, those terms. Your fiance and soon to be ex-husband, and he will be your ex-husband within the next 3 years, is over your shit. He doesn't want to hear it anymore. Let's go over everything, okay? You're engaged for almost a year. You're living together. You call his daughter your stepdaughter. You have a daughter together with him. You're making dinner together. And now you're coming out, accosting him, accusing him of not loving you because he won't give you a kiss, or as you call it, a peck on the lip. You're acting like a petulant child. You're the one who deserves to be in the bedroom alone with an iPad, not in the kitchen. When I say your husband or soon-to-be ex-husband is over your shit, what I mean by that is you're being needy without being needy. And I'm not even sure how you do that, but you're doing it because you're asking for nothing. A peck on the kiss, which is nothing. But when you do it over and over and over again, day after day, it becomes cumbersome. And it's like, enough with the peck on the kiss. Like, if you're feeling stressed, like you say you are, is a peck a little on the lips, on the cheek, is that really going to relieve you of your stress? I think not. What you should have asked your husband, you're thinking, hey, I'm stressed out. Our stepdaughter, who's not really my stepdaughter yet, is in the other room zoning out on her iPad. So why don't you dick me down, pipe me down, take my torso, bend me out the window so everyone else can see me and fuck me from behind. That would be a real stress reliever. If you asked your soon-to-be husband of that, I'm positive. I'm positive he would lift up your dimply ass on the kitchen counter and give you a good dick down to relieve your stress. That's what he would have done. But no. You asked for a little peck like you've been doing every day. And your husband, he's just over it. And you're just annoying. I see what you're doing here in this post, And like I'm visualizing your living room, or whether it's a house or apartment, your living room, guarantee you, you have like a count, an advent calendar for your soon to be wedding, like a countdown calendar. So it's like 26 days to the wedding, 25 days. You bought a sectional from Raymore and Flanagan. You have coasters that have like you and your partner's hands like on top of each other. You have like four of those coasters. Of course, on the wall, you have mounted a engagement photo that you got professionally done. It was probably in some field filled with sunflowers. And you bet your ass the photo is of you and your fiance kissing, because that's all you're about. It's just no fucking, but you love a good peck. Who the fuck are you? And the thing is, I don't blame you. This is who you are. This is what you want. He gives you a peck every day. He has up to this point. And now he's not giving you one. And now you're asking why. You're giving him the stink eye, which you should. But I don't blame you. I blame your soon-to-be ex-husband, because he allowed this to happen. See, when you two first started dating, he came into your frame, not the other way around. You dictated the terms of the relationship. And your terms were pecks, smooches, as much as you want, and he gave them to you. What he should have done is date two or three, you're at a restaurant, the waiter is there, you go to kiss him. He should have said, no, honey, this is not how we're going to do this relationship. I'm not into that kind of PDA. It's disgusting. It's not adult-like. Let's be adults, have our meal, we'll kiss in the back of our Camry afterwards. But he didn't do that. He didn't have the balls to frame the relationship how he wants it to be. And the problem that's going to arise, which I think is starting to arise, is you can't respect your fiance because you're living a relationship through your window and not his, and you can't respect a guy if you're the one dictating all the rules. Since you don't respect him, that's why you're not asking him to, take your top off and bend you outside the window for everyone to see as he fucks you from behind. You're only going to allow a man you respect that you get the tingles for to do that. And since you're the one with the leash, you're the one walking your fiance, soon to be ex, around, this relationship is crumbling. It's, talking about conspiracy theories earlier, it's 9/11, it's the two towers just vaporizing, falling at the speed of buildings fall. I'm not sure. I'm not a scientist. But this relationship, it's comatose. It's right now, it's in a coma. It will not survive. You'll end up getting married. You'll end up getting divorced. So that's 8-year-old stepdaughter. You'll never see her again. Tough for that guy. Okay, he's gonna end up getting remarried. So he'll have three baby mamas. He's definitely going to be running from all those child support payments. So he's probably going to end up being a listener, a viewer of Verbal Graffiti. But again, it's all, I put the blame all on him. It's over. This relationship is over. You're going to go through with it because that's just the type of lady you are. I'm thankful I'm not either of you. Let's get into some photos. Well, that first segment started off on a somber note, yeah? That's okay, though, because I do believe that's where comedy should reside, and that's in the Isle of Despair. I see too much comedy, whether it's a stand-up or sketch, where, at least in my opinion, the tone where the comedian is talking does not match the action that's being talked about or discussed. An example would be, or is... a comedian talking about he goes to a barber and the barber's talking to him in Spanish, thinking he can speak the language, but he can't. And he'll be like, oh my God, the barber thought I spoke Spanish. And it's like, whoa, your tone is way too zany, hectic, ADHD, child, frenetic for what's actually happening, where there was just a bit of miscommunication. between you and the barber. I've always been more drawn towards the Louis C.K. school comedy, where like I'm the dreariness, the somber, the dark, where just for example, it's like a day you lose your job on the spot, you get laid off, then your wife calls you and tells you she's cheating on you and wants a divorce, and it starts to pouring rain. So you dip into your favorite diner. You order a sandwich and you say, hey, can you please hold the mayonnaise? I don't like mayonnaise. 25 minutes later, the sandwich comes and it's just dripping with mayonnaise. And that look on your face of like, can my day get any worse? Like that moment, that's funny. Like that's where the giggles, that's where the chuckles come from. Not so much like in that exact moment, but years from now, when you talk about it, you'll get a good laugh. Like when you think about whether it's like your family when you're growing up or your close friends growing up, all the times you reminisce about are usually revolve around something tragic that happened. Like you got hit in the head with a baseball, or someone fell off a bike, or you know, like your dad or your mom was yelling at you and everyone was angry at each other. Like that, like in the exact moment, it's not funny, but if you survive it, like it becomes a legendary story, and that's the gold mine for humor. At least that's what the B-man likes. Also, that first segment, I just want to clarify that I am pro PDA, public display of affection. I prefer my PDA to be obscene. Like I don't want to smooch on the lips. I want us to be sucking each other's faces off, to be grabbing each other's butt cheeks, to be claw. Like I want scars on my shoulders. I want to rip your stockings. You know, I want you like to rip the neck of my shirt to loosen it up. I went on a date once to a strip club, and me and my date, we were sucking face like in the back so much that the security guards had to kick us out. They're like, dude, go to a hotel room. That's the PDA I approve of. It's like, your PDA should make everybody around you uncomfortable. A peck on the kiss, that does not. You could kiss your grandmother like that and no one would blink an eye. I want, like, if you're going to go PDA, like, go to the level, like pre-STI. That's where I want my PDA, or if I see you doing PDA, that's where it should bump up against. With all that, let's get back into Reddit. This comes from the subreddit Don't Work Here Lady. What's this all about? First time being confused for an employee. LTLFTP. No idea what that acronym stands for. So I work at a pretty well-known discount retail corporation. Don't probe further. I'm not interested in being doxxed. So if you all keep trying, I'll just start reporting to the mods. Whoa. Coming in hot. Yesterday, I was shopping at our sister supermarket after my shift, so I still had my uniform on. Halfway down the dairy frozen aisle, I hear one lady whisper to her husband that she'll ask one of the gentlemen, glancing at me as she does, about where a product is. When she does turn around and ask, excuse me, do you know? I cut her off politely. I'm sorry, ma'am. You may have me confused with one of the staff here. I work at my store, so you'll want to look for someone in a red shirt. The staff here wears red polos. Mine was somewhere between black and very dark shade of gray, turning my sleeve to reveal the logo stitched into it. Oh boy. Thanks heavens she understood. I know there are some assholes in the world who may not have been. I believe you're the asshole in this situation. Right off the bat, there is no polite way to cut somebody off, whether that be while asking a question or during conversation or while driving. If you cut somebody off, you're what the British like to refer to as a cunt. And in this exact instance, you're not just a cunt, you're a bloody cunt on a period. Like, like way, you're being way, way too, like you're looking for an altercation. Like you're, this all happened because of you. And I'll tell you where it began, because I worked at a Super Kmart. Yes, that was a thing. If you don't know, it's very similar to Walmart. And your first mistake was not taking your uniform t-shirt off right as your shift ended. Because when you work at a supermarket or at a Walmart, at a large retail store, you'll often have to wear like a uniform, and there's definitely like, you get paid by hour. So there's a time clock. So as soon as you, and it's usually in the back of the store. So as soon as you clock out, you take your shirt off, you take your name tag off. Because when you walk through the store to get to your car, like people, if you don't take your uniform off, people will see you and ask you questions like this lady did here. And even though you're off the clock, you still had your uniform on. So if you kind of blow her off, like that person might complain to the manager, and then your next shift, like your manager is going to give you shit for, you know, not helping out. And it causes more problems than there need to be had. So when you work at a place like this, as soon as you clock out, take your shirt off, take your name tag. Also, another thing I used to do, so I despised having to wear a name tag at Super Kmart and some other jobs. So I always strategically like put it at an angle that was hard to read so that patrons had difficulty calling me by my name. So if I did something kind of cunty, they wouldn't know my name and it would never get back to my manager. Just a small hint to you who have terrible jobs. You might want to try that. That was your mistake number one. Mistake number two was just, you gave me like a Ben Roethlisberger vibes. If you don't know who Ben Roethlisberger is, he is a former quarterback of the Pittsburgh Steelers. He was well known for kind of having a personality like you do. There was one famous instance where he was at a celebrity golf tournament with a lot of like high profile athletes, including Michael Jordan. And Ben Roethlisberger was the only one who had private security with him. He wouldn't let any other athlete or fan come up to him. And it's like, if Michael Jordan is there without security and he didn't have security, then you don't need security because you ain't on Michael Jordan's level. It also kind of reminds me of like a substitute teacher who takes the job too seriously. I was a substitute teacher as well. I've had a lot of miserable jobs. When you're a substitute teacher and you try to adhere to the rules too much, and you say, oh, if you don't follow the rules or do what your teacher asked of you, I'm going to send you to the principal's office, the students will turn on you right away and make your day hell. Best way to be a substitute is just kick back, tell them what the assignment is, be chill, like don't try to ruffle any feathers, and the students, they'll like you. You'll get through the day, easy peasy. Because students don't respect substitutes, and I'm just going to tell you this right now. Nobody respects people who work at the supermarket. They'll say they do, but they don't. Nobody respects anybody who works at a supermarket, so nobody respects you. You got to get over that. What I will say is, like, you should have just answered the question. You know, I did some research. So the average size of a supermarket is 40,000 square feet. It's huge. And we all get asked questions like, hey, do you know where the milk or the cheese or the potato chips are? Like, even if we're not employees. And like, we all know how big the supermarket is, so we try to help each other out. So for you to be like, to literally tell her, hey, I don't work here, and then to show her your badge from the retail store you work at, that's a cunty move. You deserve, you know how they have those like slippery when wet signs up in the supermarket after someone's mopped it? You deserve to slip on that and break your elbow and be in a cast for 8 weeks. Cause that was a shitty move on your part. Especially like there were old geezers. Help them out. Help them out. Be a good Samaritan. Shame on you. I hope you get fired from your supermarket, sister supermarket. Hope you get fired from that tomorrow. And then the next job you get is like working at a car dealership where like you have to stand out front and hold up the sign that says, hey, free oil changes, come in, or free car wash, come in. And it's like 95 degrees and they don't give you a hat and you have a bald head and then you get sunburned. You deserve that kind of pain because just your behavior what was reprehensible in this instance. Lastly, I will advise there's another sadistic way you could have gone. Let me explain. There was a time I was doing stand-up comedy at the Elbow Room. It was a Friday, Saturday night. It's in a downtown area. I was out front chopping it up with a couple of the comics. And we were, for whatever reason, we were both wearing black, not planned. Lady comes up to me, hot babe, young, hands me her license. I was like, whoa, what's this? And then it hit me, like, oh, she thinks I'm a security guard, like the bouncer. So in that instance, I had a decision to make. I could politely go, hey, I'm sorry, I'm not the bouncer here. I mean, look at me, I got noodle arms. Or I could have played make-believe. You know what the B-man did? I played make-believe. I looked at her license, pretend I was a security guard. Looked at her license, let her in. Her next friend, there was like a group of three or four of them, they all handed me their license. So for a few minutes, I got to pretend I was the bouncer. I kind of, you know, I bullshitted with one of them. Like, oh, dude, this is a fake. He's like, no, it's real. And fine, I let him in. No harm, no foul. Went back downstairs, killed it on stage, because that's what the B-man does. You could have done that. What you could have done, if they were asking for French fries in the grocery store, you'd have been, oh, no. And you could have sent them to the cat food aisle. And by the time that you could have fucked with them. So by the time they're there, you know, the grocery stores, it's filled with everybody wearing Crocs and they're overweight and they're hunched over their cart, whatever it's called. And by the time they would never find you and you would have gotten a good laugh out of it and they would have been frustrated. But again, that's funny. That's despair. Maybe years from now, they'd laugh at that too. Probably not. But yeah, that would be my advice. Be a better Samaritan. You deserve to lose your job and break a bone because of it. Terrible. To you and everybody else, go suck a fat one.